Hello and welcome to Open Air. I'm Renee Kemp, guest hosting for David LaTulipe today. Open Air is KALW's radio magazine for the Bay Area performing arts. It's such a pleasure to be here and talk about all of the entertaining things that there are to do in the Bay Area. Today, we'll be talking with opera singers Roy Cornelius Smith and Julian Song about their roles in Richard Wagner's groundbreaking opera, Tristan and Isolde. It'll be performed live in concert Sunday, August 26th at the Herbst Theater in San Francisco. It'll be conducted by Jonathan Kuhner, and he'll be joining the conversation as well. It's a very special performance of Tristan and Isolde. It is the first production of the newly formed Claude Heater Foundation, named after Oakland's own opera singer Claude Heater. So we'll be talking about that very special performance. Also today, Bay Area actor, writer, producer, director, and comedian Don Reed is going to be stopping by. He'll share details about his latest autobiographical one-man show. It's called Can You Dig It? The 60s. It's been extended at The Marsh in Berkeley through September the 9th, and it follows his highly acclaimed shows called East 14th and the other called The Kipling Hotel. He will be taking his audience on yet another one of those nostalgic rides through the turbulent 60s this time. So we'll be talking about the story of Can You Dig It? The 1960s. It takes place before his father was a pimp and before he was going door-to-door knocking as a Seventh-day Adventist or Jehovah's Witness. He'll talk about his religion, actually, and how that's impacted his life and his comedy. Also, Open Air's regular contributor and critic at large, Peter Robinson, will be discussing summer hikes in the Bay Area. In fact, he's going to be inviting us to take a hike. So Peter Robinson will be joining us later. But first up, we are so honored to have with us via phone today the legendary Motown singer and former member of the Supremes, Mary Wilson. Mary Wilson is among the stars who are aligned to appear in the 24th annual concert and gala called Help is on the Way. It's presented by the Richmond Ermitt Foundation, and it supports Meals on Wheels in San Francisco and the AIDS Legal Referral Panel. So she's been a longtime participant in that fundraising, and we are so thrilled to have Mary Wilson with us by phone today. Hello, thank you for being here.
Yes, hello, Renee. How are you?
I am great. We weren't sure we were going to get you. It was such such a pleasant piece of news when they said yes. She said yes. I was so thrilled.
Yes, I was too. In fact, Ken Henderson has been so wonderful each time they have an event there in San Francisco. He always calls me and asks me if I'd like to be involved, and I always do. However, sometimes I'm gigging someplace, so I can't. And so I've missed, throughout the years, I've missed a couple of their events, but pretty much I've been there a lot for some of their galas. It's always been fun.
And it's amazing. I hear the round, pear-shaped quality of your voice, and it's like I know that voice, even your speaking voice. I know that voice.
Isn't that amazing? Because I was in a grocery store the other day, and someone turned around and said, I recognize that voice. And I'm like, and I was not looking very good, okay? I ran out to get something. And I had no makeup on, my hair back in a ponytail, no hairpiece and all that stuff. And the person says, I recognize the voice. I was so surprised. I was like, how do you recognize my voice?
There's something about that voice.
Well, I'm glad. In fact, just recently I started taking voiceover classes for things like, you know, to do for commercials and things like that. And the teacher said, oh, you have a great voice. I'm like, this is the voice I wake up with every morning, you know.
You think?
But yes, it's always so much fun coming there to San Francisco, one of my favorite places. And you know, what the organization does is so great for the young people. I have a lot of charities that I'm involved with, and a lot of them are for young people. You know, so this is really fun, and the work that they do is so great and so beneficial to, you know, so many people.
Well, we're lucky to have you coming back to the Bay Area for the 24th mm-hmm. annual. And, of course, you know, we would be remiss not to ask you about your remembrances of mm-hmm. the late Aretha Franklin, who passed away today at the age of 76. Would you like to share any memories?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's amazing because I've had calls every since this morning, and I have been speaking with my friends there in Detroit, and we, you know, we all knew that she was very, very ill and possibly wouldn't, you know, last for very long. Mm-hmm. And, you know, things start coming through your mind because I first knew Aretha through her sister, Carolyn, who wrote many of her songs. But Aretha, Carolyn Franklin and I were in elementary school together. And so I knew her before I knew Aretha. And, you know, it was just those thoughts just come back through my mind. And Aretha I posted something today, and it says something about, you know, the UK has the queen over there, but we have the queen of soul, Aretha Franklin, and it's pretty much that, you know, people have learned how to sing because of Aretha. Aretha had a great talent, as her did her father too. Her father, Reverend Franklin. My family and I went to their church, so I first knew Aretha from church, actually, and you know, she was definitely the queen.
You know, I read up a bit about her, and she had her mm-hmm. first child at 12. By the age of 14, she already had two children.
Oh, I didn't know any of that.
Yeah.
I didn't know any of that. I kind of just really knew her through, you know, her singing and that. Whatever.
It just seems to me that the quality of her voice and the pathos, what she brought mm-hmm. to those songs, it kind of, when I started reading up on her early life and the things that mm-hmm. she struggled with, it seems to me you could hear that. That was unmistakable. And as they would say, you know, you can't fake that funk. Either you have lived that life and you know what it means when you're talking about a natural woman, or, you know, you either kind of know that or you don't. And, you know, a bit, I was just amazed at the richness of the life that she led and how that kind of translated into her music.
Well, you know, I guess they say, you know, God gives everyone some kind of talent, and Aretha definitely had a talent. But I also have to say that her entire family were all musical. Her father, Reverend Franklin, had a tremendous voice. You know, so did her sisters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes you're fortunate to come from a family who has that type of thing. No one in my family, other than myself that I know of, can sing. And I was telling my grandchildren, I said, well, I hope one of you guys has a voice, you know, because I don't know. I don't know. That didn't come through my family.
It skipped a generation, huh?
Yeah, it skipped. That's exactly what I told them. Yes, I said, you know, so I guess, you know, it did skip a generation. But anyway, you know, that's something that's really important for all of us to realize, that we are given certain talents, and then some people have talents and are not able to always develop those talents, and some people are not as fortunate, you know, as a lot of us are, and that's why organizations like you know, the Richmond Ehrmann Foundation is so important, because it does work for some people who just do not get those same opportunities. And I'm, you know, 75 years old. Well, no, I'm not 75. My daughter says, Mommy, you're 75 next year. Okay, so anyway, I always try to get a year ahead, you know, that way I'll prepare for when it comes. But anyway.
But you know what? You look so fabulous. You know, seriously, only people who really look great are willing to kind of up that number. You look fabulous. I don't know what the secret is, but okay.
No, I don't think. For me, you see, I was always, in fact, when we the Primates were very, very young, and we'd always go out, and you know, a gang of us, and then they would always ask me, the one at the very end, hey, you, can we see your ID? I always had this baby face, you see, and back then it wasn't so wonderful, because I was carded until I was something like 50 years old.
Wow.
And it was always embarrassing, so for me, I'm like, just, I'm thrilled now finally to, you know, be whatever, you know, whatever I am, so that's why I talk about it. And now, back to the foundation, I gotta say that they've asked me, they said the icons, you know, this show's about icons, sometimes they do Christmas shows. Help is on the way, and then they've had Broadway themes. They have a lot of different type of themes. So this year, they said that I think it's about the icons, and so I'm going to be one of the icons. I'm so thrilled. You know, when we were young girls, whoever we never thought about getting older and becoming icons. We just wanted to sing, you know, just to sing. And so now all of a sudden, I'm an icon, which I say, okay. That's all right.
And you'll be joined by a couple, Debbie Boone, concert violinist Eileen Bourgade, and Broadway singer Davis Gaines, Paula West.
Yes, I'm so happy because sometimes as a singer you're not able to perform with other singers, you know. So it's so wonderful, you know, to be able to be on a show with other talented people. Always fun. You know, the people don't realize that we have fun up on stage. I know that they pay lots of money because they do pay lots of money for those tickets. You know, and so it's worth it because you get they get a chance to really be you know, see lots of different people. And that's always, it's fun for us as well backstage. So we're having as much fun backstage seeing each other. Hey, girl, Debbie, I haven't seen you in years. How have you been? You know. so it's fun all the way around, and we're, you know, raising money for wonderful causes.
So how often are you performing, Mary? Are you still recording? What does your life look like nowadays?
Well, it's quite full, actually. I still tour all over the world. I just got back from England for a couple of weeks there. I tour pretty much every weekend or so. I'm out. So I'm still out there a lot. In fact, my website probably has a lot of that on it, where I am. I took off a couple of months this summer because I worked so much. I said, you know, I need to stay home and clean up my apartment.
Where are you living? What city?
Well, I live in Las Vegas, but I have an apartment here in L.A.
Okay.
Because my grandchildren are here. So I spend about half the week here and then half the week at home in Las Vegas.
Okay.
And I do want to bring up something, speaking about, you know, the Hearst Theater, where our performance will be.
Mm-hmm.
My other friend, Otis Williams of The Temptations, has a play called Ain't Too Proud.
Oh, my goodness. And they portray you in that film, right? I mean, in that play. There's a character who plays you in that play, right?
I don't know. I know the Motown musical, there is someone. I have not, I'm going... Oops, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
There is a Motown, you know, play that I'm a part. I know they have me in there. But I haven't seen The Temptations play yet. I'll be going... Hello?
Mm-hmm. Go right ahead.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think someone's trying to call me. Anyway, I'm going to see the play with some of the other ladies of Motown, Claudette Robinson of The Miracle.
Oh, yes.
Going Brenda Holloway.
Wow.
Thelma Houston. We're all going together to see the play.
My goodness.
I believe it's coming up next week, so we're so thrilled. Otis Williams told me, you know, he's only living Temptations now, and he told me that... they think that it's going to Broadway. So we're so thrilled, you know, that it will hopefully go to Broadway.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing because we're talking about guys and girls, us, who we've known each other since we were teenagers. I mean, I knew Otis when we were still the Primettes back 50, 60-some years ago. So, you know, it's fun to see when people really succeed and you know, do well, like this play I've heard. I haven't seen it yet, but I heard it was fantastic.
Well, I got to see it here in Berkeley. It kind of got its preview, and it's remarkable.
That's what he said, Berkeley. You're right.
It is so good. It's the one you would see three or four times. You could go back again and again.
Yes, I've heard so. So I'm just thrilled that it's Otis, you know, that he has been able to do this, and just, you know, kudos to him for that. Now I hope that maybe they'll do a play on the Supremes, you know. That'll be cool.
That would be way, way cool.
Based on my two books, you know, I had two books. What was it? Dream Girl, My Life is a Supreme, and Supreme Fate.
Of course. Well, we knew about Dream Girl. We knew about that, right? It's remarkable.
I'm actually working on my third book now, so hopefully that'll be finished soon.
You know what the title's going to be, so we can look for it?
Well, I'm not sort of giving it away right now because it's really top secret, so I just told you. I should not have said that. Now everyone's going to know.
You heard it
but
here first.
But they know that I did it on your show.
You heard it here first.
Yes,
you know, I wonder, yes, because there's so much going on in the world and artists kind of stepping up. So much of what you and others that worked with you at Motown and others were civil rights activists, too. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, as you look at what's going on in the world, do you feel compelled to kind of step out of the artist role and weigh in on those kind of things now, the way so many of you guys did back in the day?
Oh, I still do. I mean, that's what I do probably half the time. That's what I do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people who are interested can go on my website, MaryWilson.com, and see all the things I'm involved in. Mm-hmm. You know, around the world, there was one cause I did with the Humpty Dumpty Institute, and it was, against bombs that were unexploded in different countries. Like, I went to Vietnam, I went to Laos, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I went all over the world, and then Colin Powell appointed me and other people in the arts as cultural ambassadors, so I went around the world doing that. I have several wonderful organizations that I'm a part of has to do with children. Out of New York, there's one called Figure Skating in Harlem, and I think they're starting one in Detroit too, Figure Skating in Detroit, where they teach young girls how to ice skate, which
is really
fun. And they so many other things they are, you know, the people come in and teach them. So that's really a wonderful one. So, I do quite a few things on the side, because I think as you get older, you realize, you know, you need to sort of give back and do things for other people, just not just for your gold records on the wall, you know.
Mm.
And, so I'm involved in a lot, but, you know, it's just something I kind of do now.
Well, and part of your philanthropic work is going to be appearing at the 24th Annual Concert and Gala called Help is on the Way, presented by the Richmond Ermitt Foundation. Again, that's supporting Meals on Wheels in San Francisco and the AIDS Legal Referral Panel. Mary Wilson, it has been such a treat. Thank you so much for being here. It's just been a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
All right.
My pleasure.
All
Thank
right.
you.
Thank
Bye.
You, Mary. Bye.
I need love to ease my mind, and I need to find behind someone to call mine. But mama said you can't learn in love, you just have to wait. She said love don't come easy, it's a game of give and take. You can't learn in love, no, you just have to wait. You gotta try.
Wilson to Wagner. We've got a little feedback going here. We'll fix it. If you're just joining us, I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for David LaTulipe, and this is Open Air, KALW's radio magazine for the Bay Area Performing Arts. We just heard from Mary Wilson, former Motown star, who's going to be in town doing some philanthropic work. And also happening in the Bay Area is the performance, a very special performance, of Tristan and Isolde. The Bay Area Performing Arts is really thrilled because opera singers Roy Cornelius Smith and Joyen Sung are going to stage their roles in the groundbreaking opera, performing live on Sunday, August 26th at the Herbst Theater. And we are joined by both Roy and Joyen. Thank you so much for both of you being here. And we're going to be talking about your roles in Tristan and Isolde. We're also joined by the conductor, Jonathan Kuhner, who will be talking about the story that is being brought to life on the stage in this opera. So, Jonathan, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us here.
Can we talk first about the story of Tristan and Isolde?
Oh, well, you might say it's the original love story. It's a medieval story that was apparently one of the first really romantic stories, true love, not just arranged marriage. And Richard Wagner, was written about 150 years ago, writing a romantic opera, wanted to write something that was so engrossing and so moving, with the music filling one's whole being when one's listening to and watching these lovers on stage with love and sex, actually. He thought he would be driving people crazy. And in fact, the opera was considered totally decadent. People, in a way, loved the music, but they also felt it was too strong. It's a story of star-crossed lovers who should not be in love with each other because the woman is married to somebody else, and yet they are in love, and they can't prevent it. They want to hate each other, but they drink a potion, and it turns that hate into love. And when they're about to consummate their relationship, her husband, who's king, comes in, and the Tristan is wounded, and he eventually dies. But the twist, the philosophical twist, is their death through love is exalted. Love and night and death are put together. And we know that there's always in art there's something that is matching between love and death, some escaping life in some way. So the end of the opera is a beautiful solo for the soprano who essentially evaporates, happily saying, "My Tristan is dead, and I want to be with him in eternity, in all-embracing universe." But in the opera itself, it's full of yearning, the yearning for something, we're not always sure what it is, but it turns out to be love. And then when the lovers get together, they have a long half hour, 40-minute duet, where they talk about what it means to be in love, to commingle with each other, and they get more and more excited. They lie down on the bank and have a soft time together, but then they get more and more excited. Of course, there wouldn't be any real graphic sex on stage, but the music says it all, and the words say it. At the very climax, they say in German, it's heiß erglühte Brust, höchste Liebeslust, which is what they're feeling. It means a hotly glowing breast and the highest ecstasy of love. So you can tell it's an orgasm about to happen, and then the bottom drops out because they're discovered. And this is all portrayed through very passionate music.
Well, there's a lot of sex in this play. Really.
There really is.
This performance has literally...
Unfortunately, we're not going to stage it. This is a concert performance. So, but that means that one's imagination as a listener or as an audience member will be stimulated also by a video score that we're going to be having. Abstract pictures, but will all contribute to the effect.
Well, I'm sure our listeners will be delighted that we're going to actually get back to the sex part and talk to you, you know, because that's what everybody wants to talk about, right? About the fact that this literally is one of the sexiest productions ever written. So let's talk about what it's like to play these roles. Roy, can we start with you?
Okay.
As Tristan, talk about who is this young man?
Well, Tristan is, it's a very difficult role to perform. Mainly because of the stamina that it takes to actually get through the role. The opera is about 4 hours long, and Tristan sings maybe 2.5 hours of that, I would say. And most of, you know, like Jonathan said, the duet in Act Two is very difficult because it's very long. It's about 40 minutes long. We are doing the standard cut, so that makes it about 35 minutes long. I'm just kidding, but it is a little bit shorter. But then to go from that to Act Three, where it is almost all Tristan. He has 3-4 monologues in Act Three that he has to sing, and to sing that while trying to make the audience believe that he's dying. Mm-hmm. So you have to sing as though you're dying, but not really dying with your voice. Does that make sense?
Sure. You have to still project.
You have to still yeah. sing it and support it, but you have to make the audience believe that you are dying,
mm-hmm.
Because you can't just
belt
full
it out
and belt it out, mm-hmm. and sing it like you did in Act One. There's mm-hmm. got to be a progression of Tristan going from Act One, where he's bringing Isolde back to to King Mark. And then the progression to Act Two, where they fall in love, and you have this, like Jonathan said, this ecstasy and this passion, and to Act Three, where he's dying,
mm-hmm.
and then he has outbursts of visions, seeing visions of Isolde, and then all of a sudden, no, it's not her, and then he's talking about death and light and darkness. And
it's such gothic themes,
it's
too.
Really gothic.
But that's got to feel good, though, to be able to just really... There's no such thing as over the top when you have themes like that.
Yeah.
Joy and Song, talk about those kinds of gothic themes. You are literally... You heal. You have the ability to heal
right.
this man that you love, but you are married to his uncle, the king.
Mm-hmm.
So, once again, those are such big themes. How do you... how do you encase all of that love and pathos into a role?
Well, I think Isolde represents many female, lives in those eras, and also maybe in some countries, even now too, women has been a tool for political benefit for countries and families mm-hmm. and business. So her character is just really amazingly complicated, and also it represents a lot of historic reality. And for me, Isolde is a very young person who had almost everything as a princess, but then she also realized in this first scene she has nothing, and she cannot even have a man who she fall in love with. She knew who he was, and then she basically helped him to be healed with all these tools that she learned from her mother, healing balsam. But she just fell in love with him while she was taking care of him.
Mm-hmm.
Even
you're right,
she
that
knew.
That is a very special theme for females
exactly,
in real life.
Exactly, in real life. You know, and also she knew when he was lying to her, when she didn't know at first, what's your name? And he said, Tantris, which is, opposite of Tristan. So he gave her a wrong name to conceal his identity. When she found out, actually, he is the man who killed her fiancé, who was supposed to marry. She could really kill him to revenge. She almost killed him, but she knew she was already in love with him. So that changed the whole dynamic of her emotion.
Mm-hmm.
They both were already in love at that moment. But he, Tristan, as a nobleman who was raised by King Mark, he was orphan. He could not betray his uncle and his country and his king. Isolde had much more freedom to follow her emotion
mm-hmm.
than Tristan, in my opinion. But she really tried to, compose her noble identity and tried to hide her feelings. But when she was almost closer to meeting King Mark, she didn't have any much time left.
Well, again, the themes are so mythic. You were star-crossed. There
yes,
was a potion
yes.
that you weren't supposed to drink, but somehow you drank the potion and fell in love, and you treat
well,
him
Well, the potion
for,
the potion was supposed to be a poison.
It
was
supposed to, not the love potion.
Yeah, it was supposed to kill them,
right.
because she was like, I'm going to kill him, and I'm going to kill myself.
Right. I'd rather die myself and kill Tristan than marry with somebody who I'm not in love with.
Oh, that's right. And then you find a piece of an arrow that was left from the fight that he had with his uncle,
yes.
and you recognize that you had treated this wound in him before. So once again, the star-crossed nature
yeah.
of the love affair, and it's really, the themes are so huge.
And
but
yet, and
as
yet,
Jonathan, you talked about sex.
Yes.
There's a special opening chord that's really revolutionary that's supposed to kind of... You're supposed to be able to experience coitus interruptus based on this chord.
Well,
so let's see what that sounds
we'll
like.
Shall
we? Well, now let's see. What part are we talking about here? Describe what we just heard.
This is the opening of the opera, and nothing's happening yet. The curtain's not risen yet, but it's the feeling. It's the feeling of yearning, and that chord that sizzles is a chord that you don't know what it means. It's a question. It's a memory. And I happen to think that the way it's done, and this recording isn't bad, this is a recording of Ada DeVart, but I would like to do it a little differently in our performances, because this grows and grows and grows. And I think the first time you hear it, it should be just a very small itch, passionate, mysterious. It's often done more overblown, as if to say, this is passion. But it's not passion at the beginning. It's just a hint. And it grows and it grows inexorably. It takes hold of you. You don't know where it's going to go. And the thing about Wagner is he doesn't give you a resolution. Classical music is always balanced.
Mm-hmm.
Popular music is always balanced. You have four-bar phrases. Every sentence has an end. Well, this is poetry. This is music that goes forward, takes a breath, it goes again, doesn't relax completely, doesn't go anywhere in particular over a span of an hour and 20 minutes. The whole act unfolds, always having you in its clutches. And this is the same thing that could happen as in making love, where there's you're striving for something that's very warm and pleasant, and yet the arrival, you may think the arrival is everything, but the whole experience includes the arrival, but goes from the beginning to the end. And this is Wagner's genius and his new statement in opera, is to build these long spans of time. At the same time as the conversations people are having, the characters are very realistic. They unfold slowly, but they're real people talking to each other. They're not mythic. They're real.
Well, if that doesn't get you to go and see the performance, I don't know what will. Resolution, no resolution, love unrequited. It is amazing, and I can't wait to hear the performance. Thank you so much. That's Tristan and Isolde. It's being performed in concert Sunday, August 26th at Herbst Theater. Are tickets still available, by the way, Jonathan?
Yes, they are.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. We are so grateful to have had Roy Cornelius Smith and Joyeon Sung here. They are singing the title roles, and conductor Jonathan Kuhner, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Hello, and welcome back. This is Open Air, KALW's radio magazine for the Bay Area Performing Arts. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for David LaTulipe. Such a pleasure. Although you might get a little whiplash. We're going from Tristan and Isolde to Mary Wilson, and now we are changing gears. We are talking to Bay Area actor, writer, producer, director, and comedian, Don Reed. Thanks. Thank you so much for stopping by. It is a pleasure. You know, I was looking forward to your next installment. I saw East 14.
Yes.
And I saw the Kipling Hotel.
Oh, very good.
And this newest one is called Can You Dig It? The 60s.
Exactly. It's a prequel to East 14th. It's everything that happened before my father ran off into the life of the streets.
He was a pimp, yes?
Yes, he was.
Okay,
he
talk
about
You
yes.
know, set it up.
Okay. Yeah, my stepfather forced us to be in that religion that rhymes with Jehovah's Witnesses. No need to say it. Learned a lot about public speaking, though. I did. And then at a certain age, around 16, I couldn't take the pressure, and so I moved in with my real father. But I had no idea he was a pimp. I really did think he was just in the hats. But it turns out he was into more. But interestingly enough, he ended up pushing me through high school and junior college and saying, "You're not going the route I'm going. You're going to go your own route," which ended up ending up at UCLA. Mm. So the outlaw ended up being the one who navigated me to higher ground. Yeah.
How hard is it to kind of go back over and curate your life like that? How do you know what to include, what to put in, what to leave out?
Yeah, it is a rather big editing job. But the thing about this show as opposed to East 14th, I think East 14th is probably about 80% laughs and 20% dramatic tone, and this show is more of a roller coaster. There's a lot of laughs, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of rich beats as well, because Martin Luther King's assassination happened in that window. Mm. Family members passing happened as well, but it's more of a roller coaster ride in this show, Can You Dig It? But there's some funny beats as well, absolutely. Just off the top of my head, I was thinking about my father, before he ran off into the streets, was at home a lot and played a lot of games.
What kind
of
games?
We played hide-and-go-seek, we played tag, but he'd make up some games, too. He had one game called, "Baby, we're going to play this game called Hide the Dirt. I'm going to hide some dirt. Y'all clean up the whole house and see if you can find it." I'm like, that's a scam. That's not a game, is it?
Otherwise known as chores?
Exactly.
Is that the idea?
Yeah.
So there's a reference in your materials to the dog-faced man.
Yes.
What is that? Who's the dog-faced
man? There was a kid who lived up the street. When I was around maybe 9 years old, there was an older kid who lived up the street who would pull us in with these terrifying tales of horror that he made up. He's like 13 years old. Mm-hmm. Had a voice sound like he had 7 or 8 cotton balls for breakfast. He said, "Listen, y'all, I'm about to tell y'all the terrifying tale of the dog-faced man. There's a man. Look, y'all, look up the street." We're all terrified. Like, where? Look up the street. "There's a man who lived behind them trees. They got the body of a human, but the head of a full-grown dog."
Okay.
"And he's really fast. You try to run away from him. By the time you get to the other end of the block, he's already there. So don't run from him. He's the dog-faced man." But we were terrified of him. He'd just trick us all the time. "He's behind that tree right there. Look over there, y'all."
Now, this is your homegrown talent. So do people recognize themselves in your stories when they come to see you perform? Like, hey, I know you're talking about Auntie. I know him. That was my uncle you're talking about.
Yeah, I've had a couple of beats of that. But because the key people, my mother, my brother, certain individuals gave major kudos to the show, and they're the ones whose information I was putting out there the most. Mm. The other folks that were detractors. In all the shows, everyone has layers. There's no thin avenue to each of these people. So at the end of the day, I learned something or was uplifted in some way by each of these individuals. So if they watch closely enough and then think only about, "What would you put down the street on me?" If they're not thinking about that as much, then they would enjoy more, probably.
Is this, are we watching you undergo therapy here? Is that what's happening?
No.
Are you exercising demons? What are you doing with the performances that are so personal? They're just so personal. Don't you feel kind of naked standing up there talking about such personal things like, you know, your stepfather and your mother and your brother and your family and your upbringing?
Yeah.
I mean, don't you feel kind of raw?
I feel very raw, but it's uplifted me. and it's also uplifted the audience quite a bit. You know, for years I did stand up with you know, HBO, Robert Townsend, and just stand up on different shows for years, but I never told the truth until 2006, and I started in the business in 78. So after all that time, it was time to tell the truth, and those true stories actually lifted me to higher levels of my career than I could ever imagine. And when you think about it, all the best storytellers, performers, comedians, the best guys, Richard Pryor, all these other folks, there was the truth in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing
raw
impersonations before that. They get when you get raw and raw. But this is like the raw because it's the comedy and the dramatic tone. But
I thought the chronology was interesting, too, because you started out with your performances talking about the 70s, then you went to the 80s, now you're going back to the 60s. Why that chronology?
Because, I don't know, it wasn't Star Wars. That did not impact me at all. just the fact that I realized there were so many questions unanswered and so much depth behind that window of time in the past. And so it was just so much rich area to excavate and bring up. We know that the Queen of Soul passed today.
Yeah.
And my experience with that had a twofold nature. The first experience was I was watching Gomer Pyle, USMC, was on TV. Surprise, surprise, surprise. I was watching one of my favorite shows. He might have been on his second surprise, and my father walked in the room and changed the channel. I was like, ah! But he was turning it on Aretha Franklin, and she was singing Natural Woman. I don't know if it was Ed Sullivan's show or whatever it was, but she was saying, you made me feel, you made me feel like a natural. I can't sing like her, but I saw that, and I forgot all about Surprise, Surprise, and Gomer Pyle. And then I used to ask my mother, hey, when we going to watch the show on the lady that sings? She said, it's not a TV show. She was just on the show. I thought Aretha Franklin had a show. I was ready to hear her all the time, you know?
It's like the soundtrack of our lives in so many ways.
Yes.
You know, I was kind of going over with some friends, like sneaking a kiss in the in your parents' basement. And,
yes.
And then sweating your hair back in the basement at a party, all the way up to singing at the inauguration of the first black president and beyond. So it's really amazing to be part of that part of history and be alive when she was singing. So it's amazing. But I'm thinking, too, that nowadays, because she was quite an activist.
Yes.
And activists and artists and comedians are really wading into some really deep territory nowadays because of what's going on in the world.
Yes.
So how did starting with maybe the assassination of Dr. King impact your father, the community? And to what extent have you brought that forward in your comedy and your performances?
Well, what my father explained to me at one point was that because my father used to do little impersonations of Martin Luther King around the house to get us to clean up. That was one of the regular things. But at a certain point, I walked in the house one day, and he was watching television. I didn't know what was on. I could just see his back. And he said, baby, they killed him. They killed him, baby.
Wow.
They killed him. They didn't have to do that. He was too good and he was too strong, so Jesus went ahead and killed him. And it broke my father's heart. It really did. And then years later, when I was about to maybe head to college around that time, he said, you need to know that a lot of brothers died inside when that happened. And so a lot of us just gave up. Like, what good does it make to try to be something special if that's what they're going to do to you? So he said, a lot of us got into the streets, got into some dark stuff. He said, but I think you got something special, baby, so I'm going to help you do that. And so it was fascinating to see that pain, out of that pain that my father experienced, there was a gift inside of there that he gave me to go to higher ground. You know?
Do you feel compelled to kind of wade into the heavy stuff now that's going on in the world and in our country? Or do you feel like, no, I'm going to steer clear as much as I can from stuff that bring people down? My performance should be about lifting people up and making them laugh.
Well, it's so much a 50-50 or 60-40 comedy truth thing now, I think. Or otherwise, we wade into an area and go backwards. There was a time in the 60s where horrible things were happening. But people didn't normalize it. They kept fighting. Civil rights elements were going on. People were getting beaten in the streets and the whole nine. But people kept fighting. And right now, we're moving into a space now, and I hope this show reflects some of that, that we need to keep fighting because we're getting normalized. There's a shooting, and we're normalized. We're still at dinner laughing with friends. There's so many of them. Something else happens with our president, if you want to call him that, and boom, people are normalizing all that instead of remembering the fight, you know. And so I hope that some of the show reflects that on some level, that you can be in a turbulent time, but don't just numb out. Stay aware and keep
stay
the fight
woke.
Alive. Yes, yeah, stay woke. And they were very woke in the 60s. That's how we got at least far enough, you know.
Well, can you dig it? The 60s. Don Reed is going to take a plunge into what was happening in the world at that time. Bay Area actor, writer, producer, director, and comedian Don Reed. Your performance has been extended at the March in Berkeley through September the 9th, yes?
Yes, 8 shows left. Come enjoy it. A lot of laughter, a lot of music, lots of dancing. Tons of dancing.
Really?
Yes.
Cool.
The jerk.
Can you dig it? The 60s. Don Reed, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
You keep saying you got something for me. Something you call love, but confess. You've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin', and now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do.
Hello and welcome back. This is Open Air, where we cover a lot of ground in an hour, and we're going to close out the hour with our favorite critic at large, Peter Robinson. And today he's going to be talking about summer hikes in the Bay Area. So Peter, introduce us to the trails and the hikes and all those interesting walks that are out there in the Bay Area.
Hi, Renee. Yeah, good to be with you. And I was just smiling as I was listening to that tune, These Boots Are Made for Walking, because I thought before going into different trails along the shoreline, over the hills, downtown here in San Francisco, I'd actually say something about boots, as a matter of fact. And I think my first tip, if you're into hiking, is don't wear a new pair of boots and break them in on the hike. Try them out, go for a walk, and then finally take them on the hike. And if you are hiking in the hills or around any of the what I call rural countryside, remember to carry a few things with you, such as a first aid kit, because you may never know what you might meet on the trails. Also, insect repellent. People forget about the bugs which fly in, give you a bite, and there you are, itching all for the rest of the hike. And maybe here in August, which is great hiking weather, don't forget sunscreen and, of course, a hat. So these are just some of the basic things, wherever you're going, that it's always good, as they say in the old Boy Scout song, be prepared. Because when you're out there, you're out there. And if it's a long hike, always try to tell somebody ahead of time that you're going, so that if anything should happen, any sort of disaster, they know at least which part of the Bay Area you are hiking in. Now, some of the trails are really extensive, and one place to kick off with, and I'm going to give a phone number for it, is the Sierra Club here. The number's 510-848-0800. And they run hikes on every weekend, and they also have midweek hikes on Wednesdays and Thursdays. They cover really the whole of the Bay Area, so you can probably find something local to you. In fact, they put out between 25 and 35 hikes scheduled each month. So there is something for everybody, and there's no need for a sign-up. So that would be my first tip, just to get a feel of what's available and what choices and what's going to work for you. Now, if we cross the Golden Gate Bridge, I'm going to make a few recommendations for Marin, and Marin really is good hiking territory. And the first, literally, as you come off 101 just before Mill Valley, is Tennessee Valley. It's just a beautiful trail. And on Friday evenings, starting at 6:30 in the summer, they have a thing called Tales Along the Trails. So it's a small group. I'll give a number for it in a second. And what you get is a chance to tell a five-minute story as you wander down towards the Pacific Ocean. And there's two options on this Tennessee Valley Trail. You can either go on the lowland, which is no hills, or you can get a little bit of an aerobic workout and go on the highland, and you'll still end up at the same place on the beach. And every hiker gets a chance to tell a short story, and then we gather on the beach, have a little discussion about the different stories that have been happening to you that day. They can be real, they can be fiction, they can even be jokes. And then we set on the trail back again. And this is put on by the San Francisco Literary Society, and a number to reach them there is 415-381-6671, and that is a storytelling hike called Tales Along the Trails. Now, further into Marin, if you want to take a car ride, I highly recommend Point Reyes. It's just a beautiful part of Marin. It has a lot of history going for it. Tamales Bay is one of the places that they suggested Drake landed on his first voyage over here in 1576. And there are several different trails. My favorite one is called the Bear Trail, B-E-A-R Trail. And there is also an opportunity to go out to the Point Reyes Lighthouse. And if you go to the lighthouse, you can look across the bay and you can do a shoreline or walk along adjacent to the water. Two beautiful, very different types of settings, and really a break from all that work you may have been doing at a city desk all week. So those are two suggestions in Marin. One is called Tennessee Valley Trail, very easy to get to. First major turnoff on Highway 101 as you go towards Mill Valley. You take a left and then the trail takes you down to the coast. And then further out, much longer, out at Point Reyes, totally different part of the countryside, just beautiful, and you can see the water. You actually end up on the water if you go to the famous lighthouse there. So those are two very different options. Now, in the city itself, San Francisco is a great walking city, and you'll certainly get a fair number of what I call workouts because the hills demand attention. But there is a group called the Golden Gate Hiking Group, and they run hikes in and around the Golden Gate area. So you have a chance to go through some of the parks, of which probably Presidio is a good example. And there is a lot of green in San Francisco. Quite a bit it has to do with the military, the places they kept open because they got some beautiful barracks, and they've now converted that into the Presidio Park. And then, of course, I know Renee is with us, and you, in fact, are engaged in the East Bay Parks. Is that right, Renee?
I am on the board of the East Bay Regional Parks Foundation, and we have the most wonderful resources in the East Bay, that beautiful necklace of parks mm-hmm. and hiking trails, and everybody has their favorite, I think. Mine is Huckleberry.
Right, yeah, I even like the name Huckleberry.
Don't you love that name?
Yeah. And the great thing about park walking is, for the most part, it's flat. So if you're not there for working out the body, but you're actually there to stroll. I like the old word stroll. In England, they use the word to ramble. Now, ramble over here means to talk excessively. But there is such a thing as a ramble, which is like a gentle hike. And I think the parks are a good place. And the other thing about parks is that you can bring your dog, because some of the trails, the dogs either have to be on a leash or you're not even allowed to bring them unless they're a therapy dog or some other type of specialized dog. So park walking, I think, is a way of keeping yourself fit, having a chat, go with a friend, enjoy the conversation. And I'm just going to say a personal bias I have about hiking. I do a lot of book reviewing, and I like at bedtime listening to a book on tape or an audio book. But when I'm hiking, I want the great idea, the great outdoors, to come into my ears. So I make that distinction between trying to listen to a book when I'm hiking. And as a travel writer, using all the senses, your sense of smell, your sense of sight, your sense of feel. And one way of getting a sense of feel, particularly as the fall or the autumn kicks in, is to pick up a leaf, hold it in your hand, and just make that connection that there you are, outdoors, actually walking, at the same time feeling. So I'm just going to repeat these numbers again for people before we tune out. The Sierra Club is 510, and it's 848-0800. They'll give you a good lead into all the different hikes. Tales Along the Trails, area code 415-381-6671. And then Mount Tam does have an interpretive society which can give you a good guideline. And that's area code 415-258-2410. So enjoy the great outdoors. Not spring is in the air. Not autumn is in the air. August is in the air. And the sun is out and it's shining. I'll see you on the trails.
Late summer in the parks in the Bay Area. It's a wonderful thing. Peter Robinson, our regular critic at large, thank you so much for inviting us to take a hike.
Good to be with you.
Next week on Open Air, our regular host, David LaTulipe, will be back, and he'll be talking to choreographer Gregory Dawson and saxophonist Richard Howell about their new project, Mangaku. Also, a talk with Derek Tam and Molly Mahoney about the Street Requiem that'll be performed. That's on August 25th at the First Congregational Church of Berkeley, and together with the Berkeley Community Chorus and Orchestra. Also, singer-songwriter and Bay Area native Spencer Day will be here talking about his new album and his upcoming performance at Feinstein's at the Nico Hotel on August 24th and 25th. Also joining David LaTulipe when he comes back, he'll be talking to mezzo-soprano Ana Paula Malagon and with director Erica Wyman Abrahamson about the season-opening production of West Side Story at Hall Barn Theater. That's the Peninsula's premier theater company in Foster City. So, thank you so much for being here. We want to dedicate today's program to Aretha Louise Franklin, who passed away today, an American singer and songwriter, activist, and icon. Thank you, Aretha.
Looking out on the morning rain, I used to feel so uninspired. Yeah.
Rest your soul, Queen of Soul. Aretha Franklin. This is 91.7 KALW, San Francisco.